it's just unbelievable the amount of stimulation we're hit with each day now, from checking your phone first thing in the morning to the last thing at night.
In the 16th century, they'd give kids alcohol and opium and cocaine, but we probably didn't know the kind of the dangers of it, and we probably are only starting to learn about the dangers of phones.
But humans are not meant to be these masses of stress that we're walking around with every day.
How comfortable, Hector, are you telling us about your own burnout?
I just had a really heavy decade of drinking and drug taking. I felt like things were almost spiraling a little bit. It reached this like pressure point. And as soon as I like gave my phone in when I arrived, there was just this sense of relief. And it was like all the bit of weight that had been accumulating for years, it just felt like none of that mattered. About 5 months after I stopped drinking, I started to get these weird autoimmune issues. Immune system flare-ups, so I get this like painful burning sensation, which would last for 72 hours, keep me up during the night, couldn't figure it out. We always feel like we need something to make us happy. And of course, that's never the case. It's when you remove your unhappiness that all you're left with is happiness.
Hector, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I mean, I've been dying to come on the podcast for a while, so it's a real honor.
We've been dying to have you. So Hector, I'm going to kick off with a big open question. We love our questions. Who are you and what problem do you solve?
It's a good question. I think I'm a kind of recovering tech startup executive. So did a few years working for a tech startup after university, and just got really kind of, I mean, the elevator pitch, I guess, is just got really, you know, burnt out and sick of the busy lifestyle, flying around the world to set up these offices, spending all day on my phone, a lot of the kind of London social scene as well. Got really tired of that, and then got very interested in just my own kind of phone use and how huge that weighs on us, and just how, what a huge part of our life that now is. And yeah, what's amazing is we've just had this massive transition in society in the last 10, 15 years. And I think we're only now becoming aware of just how much life has changed, you know, for better and worse. That there's obviously some amazing things that have been made possible with the technological advances. But I also think it's causing just mass, you know, burnout and you know, it really overstimulation. Like, it's just unbelievable the amount of stimulation we're hit with each day now, from checking your phone first thing in the morning to the last thing at night. So really made it my mission, the company's mission for the last 5 years now, to get people off their phones. So for 3 days, we have cabins all over the UK, run a company called Unplugged now. And the idea is you go for 3 days, literally lock your phone in a box. We'll give you a map, a Nokia and a Polaroid camera and leave you to it. And it's not about some of the say criticism we had at the start was like, you can't change your habit in 3 days. That is ridiculous. But it's not about that. It's about changing your perception, you know, because if you actually go and spend 3 days offline, then you realize that that's possible and the world doesn't end when you go offline for a few days. So we kind of see it as almost getting people started on that journey, because all the momentum in society is towards spending more time online. Like, you look around on the tube in London these days, everyone is just sat on their phone, you know, watching Netflix or you know, playing Candy Crush or whatever it is. And so I think that the goal for us really is to move that momentum in the other direction.
I love that. I was at a conference on the weekend and they were talking about giving phones to children at a young age. And actually in the 16th century, they'd give kids alcohol and opium and cocaine in teething gels and things like that. But we probably didn't know the kind of the dangers of it. And we probably are only starting to learn about the dangers of phones. So I think when we think about a lot of people listening to this might be salespeople, business owners, what symptoms might they be facing in their own life where Unplugged would be the cure for them?
For sure. Well, I think if I could really boil it down to a word, it would be overwhelm, because, you know, you guys run a business, as do I, and like it is a lot, but it doesn't need to be as much as we're making it. And I think there's just a sense of, you know, especially since COVID, where the boundaries between you know, work and life have just completely disintegrated, and so now we are just always on. And I think, I'm not sure about you guys, but for example, a lot of my, there's a real blend between what's work and what's not, you know, because like a lot of my WhatsApps, a lot of my friendships are now, you know, people who are also somewhat involved in the startup scene and, you know, our investors and all these kind of things. So you've just got this, you've just got this like constant barrage of, you know, everything stimulus. And so I think for a lot of business owners especially, but, you know, salespeople and whoever else, like, it is just overwhelming. And I think what we don't realize is like the state of, we have this like low level anxiety as a species now of like living in, you know, living in modern society. And that is not how humans are meant to operate. So what you see when you get off your phone is the first day you're actually a bit more anxious because you kind of feel a bit like you've lost a limb, you've lost this comfort. And then the mind just starts to settle down. And after a couple of days, you just get this like deep sense of calm. And what's crazy is that is how humans are meant to operate. Like humans are not meant to be these, you know, masses of stress that we're walking around with every day. But the societies we live in cause that. So I think what's amazing is when you take the phone away, you can just access this almost like supernatural state, which is actually how we're supposed to operate. So I think that's been the biggest realization for us.
How comfortable, Hector, are you telling us about your own burnout journey? How much can we go into?
Yeah, for sure. I'm happy to bear all, so to speak. Yeah, okay. I mean, I think it was like it's a multi-layered thing, as these things often are. So I mean, I've done lots of exploration of that in hindsight, in the therapy, all these kind of things, and it came from, you know, very much teenage years, like really not being sure of myself. Got into like drinking and drug taking when I was around, you know, 15, and then just had a really heavy decade of just kind of throwing myself into that, and I think not taking the rest of my life too seriously. So it just came to a stage in my early 20s when I was just, you know, I was just so kind of tired of it, and I think just so dissatisfied with life. And I think my phone was, you know, it's just a real kind of crutch. I think, you know, when we find life difficult, when we're not kind of happy, then it's that that's when we kind of get in these compulsive behaviors. So it's just like constantly checking your phone, constantly on. And we almost use it. There's something soothing about like scrolling through in the short term, scrolling through, you know, social media or something like that. And we almost use it to like calm our anxieties. But it's kind of like drinking, right? Where if you're in the habit of having a few drinks, then it soothes you in the short term, but then you wake up feeling like shit the next morning. And I kind of think spending a lot of time on our phones is similar, where we have it now. It's just this kind of habit that we use to soothe ourselves against the anxieties of the day. But you know, really, it's just kind of eroding our brains, not to be too dramatic. So yeah, I just felt that I kind of got into this state in my early 20s of just really like feeling like I was kind of playing life on everyone else's terms. Like I was a real people pleaser at that time in life. I'm still, you know, working through recovering from that. And so I just felt I would like go along with, you know, with whatever was going on around me, you know, got swept up in all of this kind of drinking, drug taking. And it would just get kind of got to the stage where it would just get like heavier and heavier. And I felt like things were almost spiraling a little bit, which was a bit alarming. And so it reached this like pressure point when I was in 2019, when, you know, I just had really kind of heavy few months at work. It was very stressful. Social life was kind of, you know, I think I was probably medicating the stress of that in the kind of, you know, going out and the nights getting bigger and bigger. And then a friend of mine suggested this silent retreat in the Himalayas, which was a Buddhist temple on top of a mountain. And I initially laughed that off. I was like, I can't do that. Like, what would the guys at work think? You know, I didn't really have myself down as the kind of guy who would go and do that. And then eventually I was like, look, what have I got to lose? I may as well go and get out there. And getting out there, and like, as soon as the best thing about it was when you get there, they take your phone off you. And you spend 10 days completely cut off from the outside world. And as soon as I like gave my phone in when I arrived, there was just this sense of relief. And it was like all the shit and weight that had been accumulating for years, it just felt like for the next 10 days at least, like none of that mattered. So that was such an eye-opening experience. Yeah, I just realized I've done some therapy on this recently, that I had this tendency that I developed in my early teens of like, I just need to be fine. I was like, you know, I've kind of unpacked it back to some moments where I was like, you know, vulnerable or upset about something and it wasn't well received. And so I was like, my coping mechanism just became like, I'm just going to be fine. And like, whatever happens, I'm okay. And I'm just going to suppress and lock it up and just kind of exude this sense of like, you know, I've got this and nothing could touch me. And I think over the years, as I've been through, you know, life's ups and downs, I've just kind of just like absorbed all these things. So whatever happens, I've always just got this like all is well attitude. And that's fine because I think it, you know, it builds resilience and it means you can get through life's challenges, but there's a cost as well, you know? So like even if you don't feel it, you're suppressing all the things going on. So I just had these, and I've actually interestingly just gone through another like release of weight. But I up until 2019, I just had this like building of weight, this like accumulation of weight of all these like bad decisions and you know, curveballs life was throwing me. And then it just felt this silent retreat was just a huge release, and then going and starting unplugged. And then I went through a period of really feeling like I kind of conquered life and nothing was ever going to rattle me again. And then the last 3 or 4 years, that weight has just kind of started again. So there's a bit of the running the business, but then also had a lot of health stuff, which we could talk about. But that was, interestingly, a few months after I stopped drinking, I actually started to get these weird health issues. And then that has just built and built and built. And you know, life's thrown a few curveballs in the last couple of years. And really that kind of reached a head last year and finally faced up to that and faced up to, you know, I am suppressing all of this and I'm just kind of gritting my teeth and getting on with it. And I really need to recognize what's going on and just start to unpick it. So the last few months, again, I feel like I've just released that weight again. So yeah, it's interesting how the defense mechanisms that we use to cope with the world. So for me, it was just this kind of gritting my teeth and getting on with it can actually cause, you know, these issues. And I think it was very much at the root, the heart of all of these health issues I had. So yeah, life is a journey and, you know, you never know what's next around the corner, but I think you do sometimes just need to reset.
How much of that wiring between the trauma, the different beliefs that you'd picked up led you into entrepreneurship?
That's a great question. I mean, why does anyone become an entrepreneur? I think there's many reasons, right? And I think, you know, there is a huge component of this is 100% a change that I think is necessary in the world. And you know, if we don't do this, then I don't think anyone will. So that definitely plays a part. But I think if I'm being really honest, and I think there's a lot of, at the root of a lot of entrepreneurial journeys, there is just this, almost this kind of need to show the world you're special, right? Like it's such an irrational and kind of crazy thing to take on, like starting a company. Like it's such a lifestyle choice. It's such a hectic lifestyle. Again, I wouldn't trade it for the world, but it's a lot and you have to go all in. But I think there's a lot of ego, if I'm being honest, tied up with starting a company. There's this lot of like, I'm going to show the world how special and smart I am. And I think, you know, I was a dyslexic kid and I, you know, as a result, I was kind of at school, I was bad at everything writing related and good with numbers. And it just meant that, and most subjects are writing, right? So most subjects I was not good at. And so I was like, I'm not going to try and not be good at this. I'm just not going to try. And so that kind of came my identity at school. And it was like, I'm just not going to try any of this. And that was really the first, you know, 20 something years of my life. And I think I had in me this like belief that I have some very strong strengths that, you know, the world almost wasn't seeing because I was just this guy who like didn't take his life too seriously. And so I think the business, if I'm being honest, that there's a big sense of there's that need to like show the world how smart I am. Like, I think if every entrepreneur is really being honest with themselves, like that's in there somewhere. So yeah, it's complicated. There's that. I genuinely want to make this change in the world. I also love the game. Like I find it thrilling. You know, I really enjoy the, like, it's actually the further we get as a business, the more complex the game you're playing becomes. And actually I find that more intellectually stimulating. So some people are just, you know, real ideas people. They love being around a table in the early stage, like building up prototypes. I much prefer this kind of later stage, like, you know, very complex game that you're playing and just thinking about all the systems and people involved. So yeah, if anything, I'm enjoying it more as we go rather than less.
It feels like the journey has probably had like speed bumps of conflict throughout because of what you're building and the mission you're on. There's probably another parallel universe where Hector could have gone and lived on the monastery in the Himalayas and being really, really happy. So how do you balance growing a business where the antidote is step away from your phone, kind of step away from being dragged and kind of leading towards all those things. How do you balance that and kind of move closer to your mission while also staying true to yourself?
So I think, I go and do this, you know, 3 or 4 times a year, which is amazing, because you can get so caught up in the stresses and strains of running a business, and then to actually go and spend the 3 days offline in, you know, one of these amazing locations, you realize that why we're doing this, and that's just a really nice reset and reminder. So I think there's a constant process of getting caught up in everything and having to, you know, take myself off to do this, or ironically find the time to actually switch off. But yeah, what's nice is being surrounded by this message all day, and the evidence of that as well. You know, I meet people all the time who say they've come to stay and it's been transformative and all these things. So I think that's personally, it's just very good reinforcement as to why we're doing this. And it just reminds me to take care of myself as well. So there's a conviction that, like, this is, it really works. And that helps me practice what I preach, but it, you know, I of course forget it as well sometimes.
I liked what you were talking about, the accountability piece there. So one thing I've noticed as I kind of get older and maybe a little bit wiser is words get thrown around. And I feel like maybe a decade ago, the word depression was being used left, right and center. And I used to do some stuff in schools and kids were using it. And actually it was probably being used in the zone of, I'm on my phone too much, I'm not going outside enough, I feel this sadness, rather than the difference of maybe like a clinical depression or a chemical imbalance. I think one of the words that gets thrown around a lot at the moment is burnout. And I think that it probably is a spectrum. So from somebody that kind of lives and breathes this, what are the levels of that? How would people identify, well, I'm at the end of burnout, or maybe I'm just kind of dipping my toe into whatever burnout is, that I can probably go back and save myself a little bit?
Yeah, well, I think it's really interesting. And what you say about words and how they mean different things, I think is the key point here, which is words are so subjective, right? Like a word is, it's just, you know, I might say a word and it means something completely different to you than it means to me. And obviously that's a scale. So, you know, it's usually somewhere in between. So I think we generally get too caught up in society about what a given word means. I mean, there are so many debates on you know, X, formerly Twitter, about, you know, people arguing the definitions of a word, which is just ridiculous because it changes, it evolves, the society evolves, right? And I think burnout's a classic example where, you know, people probably have this, like, burnout is a very descriptive phrase, right? You think of someone completely crashing and burning and, you know, being unable to function. And I think it is a scale, and probably there's very widespread, you know, low-level burnout. And I think rather than getting caught up in that, it's almost just getting people to reflect on how am I really doing? You know, like, how am I? And I think what's crazy is most people, it's like, I'm not thriving, you know? I'm getting by, but I'm not thriving. And I think what's a shame is that we really settle for that today. There's this like narrative of life is hard, so I'm not doing great, but like that's life. And I think that's such a shame. I do think that as individuals, we should strive for more than that. I think we're all worth more than that. And it's, yeah, I think there's a sense, especially the last few years with COVID and all these things, like that, there's just, I think it's very easy to feel like a victim in this society, and absolutely no blame to you know, people who would put themselves in that situation. But it's like, yeah, that huge parts of society just feel so beaten down by life. And I don't, you know, there's not an easy answer for how to get out of that. But yeah, all I would say is like, these things can and do change. And, you know, usually it's the people who believe they can get out of it who do. And so anyone going through that, I think it's just, like, hope is a powerful thing, right? And I think hearing, it's really important, I think, for us to share the kind of stories of, you know, where we've been and just how low things have got and how it's changed. Because when you're in these, you know, I've been through some not great times in the last few years. And when you're in these moments, like, it's the lack of hope that's the most destructive. It's that feeling of like, this is never, you know, when I was really going through the health stuff, it was just like, I'm just not sure I'm ever going to get better, you know? I remember speaking to people out the other side, and they're like, it does pass. And I think that's a really important message for people to realize is, you know, these things do and will pass. And, you know, but I think we need to kind of believe that that's possible, right? Because that too much of the time people are just living in shit circumstances, shit environments, and just accepting that as that's life, and like life shouldn't and doesn't have to be like that. And so, I think rather than getting too caught up in the, like, is someone burnout or not? It's like, are you thriving? And if not, you know, maybe it's time to change something.
Did you say you had some health consequences from stopping drinking?
Yeah, it's really interesting. So I, about 5 months after I stopped drinking, I started to get these weird autoimmune issues. So this was after starting the business, and I was in a really, really good headspace at this time. And like a few months off the meditation retreat, I was like meditating every day, reading every day, just in a good space. And then I started to get these weird, like, immune system flare-ups. So I get this like painful burning sensation, which would last for 72 hours, keep me up during the night, couldn't figure it out. Went to an allergy clinic, they gave me all these antihistamines, which made it subside. But then whenever I stopped them, it would come back. Did that for a year. Then I went to see a Chinese doctor for a year, which was a chap who couldn't speak a word of English. I can't speak any Cantonese. So the conversations were brief. And he gave me these big, he basically gave me every 2 weeks, 14 bags of like twigs and leaves. And I had to brew that for 2 hours every day. So I did that for a year. Again, it kept the symptoms away, but every time I stopped, it would come back. And then I moved with my partner at the time up to Epping Forest. And my health really took a kind of dive then. This was probably a couple of years ago. I started to feel like rough every day. So every day I would just feel like hungover, basically. Again, wasn't drinking at this point. Couldn't figure it out. And then tried everything. And went to a nutritionist, put me on all meat. I was eating just meat and fruit this time last year. To cure what he diagnosed, a leaky gut. Couldn't figure it out. And eventually someone was like, you should get tested for mold, as in like household mold. And it never occurred to me before, but apparently you can do a urine test for that. So I ordered the test. And while I was waiting for it, I bought this book called Toxic by a guy called Dr. Neil Nathan. I read the book, and within about 10 minutes, I was like, this is it. And basically, you can get something called mold toxicity, which is basically mold poisoning from mold you have in the house. And it gets into your cells and just shuts down your immune system over time. So you get sicker and sicker, and you get this cascading effect of autoimmune issues. So it's been found at, you know, the heart of serious autoimmune conditions like Crohn's disease and the like, that can take place over multiple decades. And so that was a big unlock for me. And then started the treatment for that, which is a kind of very long and awkward detoxing process. And then I read another book by a guy called Dr. Gabor Mate, who's a trauma specialist. And he talks, so he treats a lot of people with chronic illness. And he spoke about how 90% of his patients are the same personality type, which is the kind of, you know, put everyone else before yourself, people pleaser, because those people suppress. So, you know, because they're concerned about other people's emotions ahead of theirs, like they kind of won't look after themselves and express their emotions. And so what you get is these people who just live a kind of very suppressed life, like a lot of emotional suppression, that adds like stress on the body, and it shows up in, you know, it just makes you much more susceptible to all these autoimmune conditions. And tracing that back, I mean, the good thing about alcohol is it's a release, right? Like it's an expression. And so I think probably giving that up was almost, I was cutting off the kind of one way that I was really expressing. And I think what led, you know, I was the issue when I was drinking is just didn't have an off switch. So I would just, as soon as I started drinking, I wouldn't stop. And I think a lot of that was like, because I was so suppressed in the rest of my life, like when I had this release, it was just like, yeah, let's fucking go. So cutting that off, I think just meant that it couldn't go anywhere, and just made me much more susceptible to these health issues. So from I'd say towards the end of last year, started drinking a bit again, you know, a couple of drinks now, nothing like the old days, but just generally living a little is a phrase someone said to me, which I think is wonderful. And so that has been hugely helpful, and actually feeling really in the last 3 or 4 months, I've started to kind of properly feel myself again.
I had the same thing in my heyday. I'm 3 years sober now, but I had the same thing where I just couldn't turn it off. So we'd probably have been the best of friends and the worst of enemies all in the same night, Hector, if we'd gone out together. Yeah. I imagine through working through what you've worked through running the business, there's probably a set of habits that you find yourself leaning on that tend to make things a bit easier. What would you say you find are the habits that work for you?
Yeah, for sure. So I think in this whole kind of starting the business, like I feel like it was a big life rebrand. I really discovered an inner introvert. So I think at that point in my life, I'd basically just been around people the whole time. I was always at the pub watching sport or whatever it might be. So I was just always with people. And I think when I went through this whole transition, silent retreat, I just really realized that I recharge well on my own. So really got into meditate. I still meditate every day. Reading has been a huge one for me. So again, dyslexic child, really slow on the uptake there. But then I just really got into it probably 6 or 7 years ago now. And now it's probably my favorite pastime. And I feel like I got some great advice on it from a podcast, which was read what you love until you love to read. Because I think so often we feel like it becomes such a chore because this is a book we feel like we should read, but we're not really enjoying it. So we feel like we have to kind of plow through it. And the point made on this podcast was actually just read what you really enjoy, and it's about building the habit, and then you'll naturally progress onto the things you should read. So that I found I've got a huge amount out of that. I think, you know, read nonfiction and fiction, I think they do different things. Like nonfiction really helps build your just models of the world and understanding reality. And you know, if you can really like reading history or whatever it is, and really you really get a deep understanding of like how things actually happen. And it just allows you to build your understanding of the world. And then fiction, I think, is really wonderful for understanding the human condition, because when you're reading a piece of fiction, you're seeing the world through someone else's eyes. And obviously, over many different books, you're seeing it from many different perspectives. So I think it really, you know, builds empathy and just helps you understand people. And that, I think, is hugely helpful for running a startup, because you're, again, dealing with this very complex system, which is you know, the world and the models you use to understand that. But then you also have people is obviously such a huge component. So I think understanding people and understanding, you know, these broader trends like society and psychology and all these kind of things is very helpful. So that's something I've got a huge amount of value out of. Again, things like it's all the cliche stuff that we know we should do more of, like, you know, journaling. I find it hugely beneficial to just write for 20 minutes or go for a walk, you know, go for an hour's walk, find so many ideas pop out of that. So it really is it's the simple stuff that everyone knows that they should do more of. But what I will say is you can go too far the other way, where I've had times where I've, you know, tried to stack all of that into a morning routine. I've ended up having like a 3.5 hour morning routine. By the time you get to only work, you're like, fucking hell, I'm kind of done for the day. So I think, again, with everything in life, it's about balance. And, but also just knowing that those tools are there if you need them, you know, like, if I'm feeling overwhelmed, I will just put my phone away and go for a walk for an hour. And that really helps. Like so often just stepping away is the answer. Whereas in the moment, it feels like, I think when we are feeling anxiety around something or feeling insecurity about something that we're behind on or that we haven't done, then our natural reaction is just to like throw ourselves into more busy work. So I find that the times that I'm busiest are the times that I'm least productive, and also the times that I'm most like insecure about something that's going on that I haven't solved or whatever it might be. And so I've just overcompensated by getting busy. So I find it's the weeks where I have much more blank space in my calendar and just time to kind of think and generally slow down a bit and just turn up better for the things that matter. Because if we're being honest, like in a working week, there's probably one or two, you know, conversations, meetings, bits of work that really fucking matter. And everything else is like so-so. And I think what's interesting is we burn ourselves out on the everything else, and then we turn up, you know, with a quarter of a brain to the things that really matter. So there's a lot to be said for like really turning up and performing at the stuff that matters, and not sweating it too much on everything else.
Hector, I really want to talk to you about the silent retreat and meditation, because I think that so much of the audience will be fascinated by that. I went on a similar thing, but it was for 3 days in Sunderland, so it was nowhere near as exciting as yours. Could you could you paint a picture? So you arrived, you'd never done anything like that before. Could you paint a picture of what that actually looked like?
Yeah, for sure. So it was up in the Himalayas in northern India. So flew into Delhi and then got another flight up to Dharamshala, which is actually where the Dalai Lama lives. And then it's just the crazy thing about India. It's just, there are just people everywhere. It's just the most unbelievably busy place. So went to this airport, which was seemingly in the middle of nowhere. Got a taxi up the mountain. You're kind of going through the forest for a bit. And then just you stumble upon this massive city. And again, there's people everywhere, horns going, all of this kind of thing. Get to the top and just stayed in some random hotel for a night. And the next day headed, like walked up a path and the retreat center is really tucked away on top of the mountain. And it was busy. So, I mean, on my course, which was called Intro to Buddhism, there were 80 people, 80. About a third of those were Indian, about a third were Israeli. So they all go after their years military service. There's a huge exodus to India to go and find themselves, I guess. And then a third were from all over the place. So a lot of people, everyone in their backpacks. And it was quite a surreal experience because you're kind of sitting there next to your backpack in this courtyard, not knowing what to expect on day one. And we had a very amusing introduction by a German monk which was again quite surreal and just telling us what to expect for the next 10 days. And then you have your dinner on the first night and you're kind of chatting to everyone. So this is before the silence starts, so good chance to meet people, and then you give in your phones and go for an evening meditation, and then you're in it. So you wake up on that first day, and similar to the kind of unplugged experience, like getting that first day, you are feeling some anxiety, you are feeling discomfort. Like it's the hardest thing for sure, especially at the start, was the sitting. So, I, up until that point, had spent all my life slouched in a chair, whether it's at home on the sofa or at a pub or whatever it might be. And you get there and, in India and generally Eastern cultures, like everything's kind of sat cross-legged on the floor. So you're sat cross-legged on a cushion on the floor. The first day, probably spend about 6 or 7 hours doing that. And so went to bed on that second night after the first full day, just an absolute agony. You wake up and your back is just killing. So, I mean, it really takes a while to get over that. But what was amazing there is after 2 or 3 days, you start to feel your body adjust and your muscles adjust. And it was a very weird feeling because I think it's so rare to be aware of that, because I realized up until that point in my life, you don't really notice changes happening in you. Because life is just this, this is pre-COVID as well. So I think COVID was a really interesting pause. But it felt like life, for the 20 years from the turn of the millennium up till COVID was just this kind of constant stream of activity. And so to stop for the first time, to actually see changes happening in my body was a very profound experience. And then the course itself was half meditation, half Buddhist philosophy. So you spent half the day meditating, half the day learning about Buddhism. And I went to that retreat very, just a very kind of, atheist and just, I would say, naive about religion. So I don't necessarily count myself religious now, but I definitely understand it better because, obviously the story of the Buddha, the Buddha was born supposedly out of someone's armpit. So you hear these kind of things, and to my very atheist mind at the time, I was like, well, this is obviously bollocks. Like, obviously that never happened. And so I really turned up with that mindset for the first 3 or 4 days. And then our teacher said something really interesting around that, which is that actually all of these things are just there as narrative value. So, fundamentally, every religion is a guide to living a good life, right? So it's almost a rule book, whatever it might be. Like it's always similar. Treat others how you'd like to be treated, like all these kind of things that helps people live a good life. And the stories around it are what helps it stick, because we as a race, as a species, we basically operate on stories, right? And just having these stories about, Jesus or Muhammad or the Buddha helps us internalize the lessons that then allows us to live a good life. So that was a really big unlock. And then the other big kind of breakthrough moment I had was the Buddhist idea of attachment, which is that, we always feel like we need something to make us happy. It's like, I need this promotion at work or this car or this relationship, and then I'll be happy. And of course, that's never the case. And you know, we continue to chase these things, and more is never enough. So what they teach in Buddhism is that it's subtraction. You know, we have everything we need to be happy, and it's taking away these cravings and aversions. We have, you know, we feel like we need this thing, or we feel like this thing is, you know, ruining our happiness because there's a building site next door or whatever it might be. And actually, like, it's our kind of, you know, feelings about these things that are causing the unhappiness. So it's when you remove, you know, your unhappiness that all you're left with is happiness, which I think is a really interesting thing, because it's so easy in society to feel like, oh, I need this. And then it's like out of your control, right? Cause it's like, I need this promotion at work, so my happiness now depends on my boss making that decision. When it's like, actually, we don't need anyone else to give us happiness, that like we have that inside us, and it's just about taking away the things that are making us unhappy.
I love that, Hector. And then when it comes to the unplugged cabins, you, like you said, people probably reach out to you all the time and tell you amazing stories. Do you have anything anecdotally of some of the success stories that people have had over the times using Unplugged?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, what was really interesting is the first 6 months, me and my co-founder Ben, we were cleaning the cabin ourselves. We would meet all the guests. So one of us would do the check-in, the other one would do the check-out. Great experience. Didn't do a great job of the cleaning, but got by. And people looked visibly different after 3 nights. So we would sometimes see a picture of someone before and afterwards, and they looked years younger, which is amazing. Just getting off your phone for 3 days, it's amazing the kind of visual impact they can have. But no, in terms of success stories, I mean, what we hear all the time, which is just really nice, is that people will go home afterwards, especially couples, and they'll just implement a little ritual. Like, it might be going for dinner once a week and leaving their phones at home, or some people really love using the physical maps, and so they'll buy a map of their local area. So it's just these little things that people almost carve out time when they get home to actually find that headspace again, which I think is amazing. And yeah, and then you hear the, yeah, I spoke to a journalist the other day who came to stay, had a press day, and she was 22, and her screen time went down from 8 hours a day pre-stay to 3 hours in the month afterwards. So that is awesome, because it's actually just so much more of people's life that they're getting back. I mean, 5 hours a day, you know, what, in a month, that's 150 hours. It's a huge amount of time. And I think that's what's amazing, is like, if we can get people in this mindset of, you know, I can spend this time offline, like, I don't need to be on my phone the whole time, then you just get so much of your life back. And like, the days suddenly become so long. Like, I think there's such a narrative, especially living in somewhere like London, that, you know, we're so busy all the time, we have no time, and, you know, can't get anything done, and, you know, life is just sweeping us along, and like, the days are long, and we have 16 hours awake every day. And that's so much time, but it feels like nothing, right? Because we're sat at a, you know, we spend all our time like commuting, or sat at a desk fucking pretending to work for 10 hours or whatever it might be. And it's just helping people see that, you know, life is long, and we do have so much more time than we think.
So there'll be people listening that have got ambitions to start something like you have that makes a difference. What advice have you got for taking something from inspiration to market fit? What was that journey?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, definitely start with the problem. I think there's way too many solutions looking for problems out there. So, you know, people would be like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if I built this, you know, app that did this? And it's like, well, does that actually solve anything for anyone? So I think what I found really useful, it's not the only way to start a business, it's just like building something that I would love to use. So it kind of came back from this retreat, and it was like, I would love to go and stay in a cabin and lock my phone in a box. And, you know, there just really isn't much out there for that. So I think if you start there, then worst case scenario, at least you've got something that you would use. But most likely, if you would use it, then a lot of other people would as well. So yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for, you know, being the customer at the start, and really doing it from that place. And the other thing I think is, you know, just yeah, there's a lot to be said for, Gandhi said, be the change you want to see in the world. And again, if you start with that, what's nice, because scaling a business is way harder than you expect. And again, everyone always says, I'm not sure I would have done it if I knew it was going to be this hard. And so there is, I think what really helps in the early stages, the naive optimism of not knowing how hard it's going to be. But I think it then becomes about staying power. And if this is something that you truly believe needs to exist in the world, then like that is the fuel, you know? And I think what's been really nice about this business is we've been through some tough times, but I've never questioned whether we should not do this or whether this is the right thing to do. It's always been just like, okay, well, how do we get through this next obstacle? You know? And I think that is very powerful, because these things, it just takes so much longer than you think it's going to take. Like, set aside at least a decade and just find something you're happy to work on for the next decade. Because the compounding effect, if you do, we're 5 years in now, and just the compounding's been amazing. And the business just evolves and grows in such surprising ways that you can never have seen coming. And so I think if you can really, compassionately work on something for 10 years, then remarkable things will happen. And the other thing is, like, if it's something you really care about and really think needs to exist in the world, like, I think that passion, people pick up on that, right? And it just makes it so much easier to hire or find investors or whatever it is, if there's a real purpose behind it, if there's a real meaningful change. I mean, I have a huge amount of respect for people who go and build, B2B accounting businesses, and absolutely no disrespect to them, but it's not my personal mission. I just wouldn't have the staying power for that kind of business. And for some people it is, right? So I don't think that our mission is any more noble than anyone else's, because we're all living vastly different lives, and what drives someone doesn't drive someone else. So yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for just finding what really matters to you, and the chances are that there's a lot of other people that matters to as well. And I think if you can show up like with that authentically driving you, then it really tells.
People listening, replay that bit a few times and with a pen. That was really, really good. When I say to you, what was the first hurdle or the biggest hurdle that you got over that made you think, if we can get over this, we'll be okay? What immediately comes to mind?
What immediately comes to mind is we didn't know anything about cabins. So we're like, we're trusted Scandinavians. So we found a Swedish company to work with, who actually manufactured the first cabin in Latvia. And we ordered it. The great thing about it is you can order a cabin before you pay for it. So we had to pay like a 2,000 euro deposit. And we didn't have any money. We didn't have anywhere to put it. It was like, look, we just order a cabin, we're going to have to figure out everything else, which is a good forcing function. So this was February 2020. And March 2020 was when the world changed. So COVID hit. We went into lockdown, which made things more complicated. But basically, we got this cabin eventually in June. Turned out to be great timing, because everyone had been locked in flats in the city for months. And so we got a ton of PR not that long after launching. But we made lots of mistakes with that cabin. So it was running out of solar power, for example, in July. This is something that obviously has to get through the winter. So we just got a lot wrong on that side of things. So we had to swap a lot of things out. And at the start, like, everything seems, do or die. And one of the things we had to do was we had this pellet burner in there. We're trying to be clever. It was like, we could either have a wood stove, or we could have this fancy pellet burner that you can control remotely. And so we could, fire it up before the guests came to the cabin, all this kind of thing. And it just didn't work. It was not fit for purpose. It was a massive drain on the solar. Like, it was an absolute disaster. So we ordered a wood stove to swap it out. And we're like, how hard can it be? We'll just go up and do it ourselves, because obviously you want to save all the money you can in the early days. So me and Ben, we're not handy guys. We went up, one afternoon. There were guests checking in at 3 o'clock the next day to fit in this this wood stove. And we unpacked it, had some other stuff to do at the cabin. So it was eventually kind of getting on to the evening, unpacked it, and found out that the chimney, the flue, was twice the size of the thing we had in there. So the hole in the roof was not big enough to get this thing in. At this point, we were like, Ben was like, should we just leave the pellet burner in? I was like, we just got to get this done. So I was like, we'll go back to London and we'll come up at 5 o'clock tomorrow morning and just get it done. I chatted to a mate of mine who works in construction about how we were going to, you know, how best to adjust the hole in the roof to enlarge it for this this flue. So came up the next morning via Screwfix, picked up some tools, we got there and kind of got off to a good start. It was cutting through the roof to get this thing in, and then got through most of it. And then we hit a metal plate when we got to the top of the roof, and found out that actually on top there was almost a kind of piece of metal welded in. So that was beyond our tooling capability. So I had to, it was probably 8 or 9 o'clock at this point, and we had guests arriving at 3. So I had to make another quick dash to Screwfix to pick up this metal saw, which is a massive thing. And so a couple of hours later, I was on the roof of the cabin, hacking away at it with this metal saw, trying to get through this metal plate. And in the process of that, I managed to put a Stanley knife through my finger. So was kind of covered in blood at this point, had to like repaint the roof afterwards. So it was covered in paint. And I was driving because, you know, we had a hire car, and we were picking the guests up as well. So eventually got it in with about an hour to spare. And so I turned up at the train station to pick up the guests, and I had a bloody rag around my finger, was covered in paint and blood, picked up these guests and dropped them off for the stay. And then went back to London, had to go to A&E that night to get my finger glued back together. And that was one of those days where you got to the end of that day and it was like, you know, if we got through that. So yeah, maybe this is all going to work out. But yeah, I mean, in hindsight, probably should have just hired someone who would have done a much better job much quicker. But everything at the time just feels so existential, and we've got to save every penny we can and all of these kind of things. I think what was really good from that day is just got this sense of like, just no matter what, we're gonna find a way through and make this work. So that was a very empowering experience, I think, but also painful.
Start a business. It'll be fun, they say. Hector, I've absolutely loved this conversation. I think it's been very inspirational for any kind of entrepreneurs. You've spoken very openly and honestly, and I think that me and Zach, when we debrief after our conversations, will probably say very similar things of, oh, that sounded like me, or oh, that sounded like where we were in our life. So if you're ever looking for two new best friend Hector, you're on the list. If people want to check you out, if they want to check Unplugged out, they want to come and stay in a cabin, how can they get in touch? How can they find you guys?
Yeah, so ironically, social media, it's just unplugged.rest on Instagram, or unplugged.rest is the URL as well. And then I'm on LinkedIn, just Hector Hughes, so come say hi on there. But yeah, would recommend giving it a go.